The following is an encore episode of Convergence with Michelle McAloon and Ellen Taylor. On this episode, Michelle and Ellen talk with Stephen Mosier about China's role in the situation between Russia and Ukraine. We hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Convergence. It's a show where we discuss faith, culture, issues of the day, and we dive into some serious stuff. But we try to bring it to you from a place of faith. So to help me with that is my co-host, Michelle McAloon. I am Ellen Taylor. How are you, Michelle?
I am doing fine. And it's really, really a pleasure to have someone like Mr. Mosier on our show this morning.
Right. Yes. Mr. Stephen Mosier is going to join us in. He was one of our first guests back when we started, Michelle. And we're always love to have a conversation with him because of his expertise in areas of the world that we don't have enough information to deal with. Author of the book, The Bully of Asia, and actually somebody in high demand now to get his perspective. So we want to talk today about the situation in Russia and Ukraine, but also the aspect of how China plays into this, so that we bring in Stephen Mosier. Welcome in.
Well, it's good to be here with you guys again.
Thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation with us. Michelle and I have been diving into this issue. It's a complicated issue, and I think a lot of times in America, we're a little buried in the specific details of the day without kind of drawing back and looking at the whole picture with a wide lens. So we're hoping you can help kind of set the stage for that on the greater world stage beyond the conflict going on between Ukraine and Russia. So first, should we be worried about China, and what kind of ways are they getting involved in this?
Well, I think we certainly should be worried about the Chinese Communist Party, which is 94 million members strong and which is run by people who control an economy now that is 10 times larger than Russia. They control an industrial base that is responsible for producing many of the world's goods, including what we find in our big box stores. They control a population that's 10 times larger than Russia. So I think anyone who's thinking about Russia and Ukraine has to keep in the back of their mind the fact that China is looming over the not just the Ukrainian conflict, where they encourage Putin to go into Ukraine, I have no doubt, but also, you know, looming over the entire world. I think the worst possible outcome of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which should end right now. I mean, the carnage is terrible. People are suffering and dying. The worst possible outcome, however, would be for the world to force Russia into the arms of China permanently, to recreate another, we used to call it the Sino-Soviet bloc back in the 1950s, if people can remember back that far.
Sure.
The Sino-Soviet bloc, where the Soviet Union and China worked together around the world to export revolution and communism. And in that case, of course, the Soviet Union was the senior partner. China was poor, and it was the junior partner. If that alliance recoalesces, then China will now be the senior partner. They will dictate events. And, you know, if you combine Russia's vast natural resources, oil and natural gas and wheat and so forth, with China's population, with its growing military, they're building missile silos by the dozen right now in China. You have a force capable of dominating not just Eurasia, but large parts of the world. That's the outcome that we must avoid at all costs. We must keep China and Russia divided. And I think the best way to do that is by realizing that Putin won't be around forever. Putin may be removed by his own people in the not-too-distant future. We may pray. We should all be praying for a quick end to this conflict. And I don't know if it's acceptable according to Catholic faith. You all are very good Catholics as well. But I would pray that Vladimir Putin has a deathbed conversion soon.
There we go. There we go. China is doing this little dance right now. As of Monday of this week, they said that they called it. It was the first time that they labeled it as an invasion. And they are kind of speaking out of both sides of the mouth. They're saying that they're not so much not saying that they don't support it, but you see them definitely kind of walking back. But I guess also on March 2nd, there was a memo released showing that the Chinese knew that Putin was going to invade Ukraine and that there was actually a plan to make sure that that was done after the Olympics.
Well, here's what we know. We know that when Vladimir Putin went to China to meet with Xi Jinping at the outset of the Winter Olympics, which should not have been held in Beijing, but were, that they signed a 5,000-word agreement. Such agreements don't get negotiated overnight. I mean, this agreement was obviously months in the making. They pledge eternal friendship to each other. It's something short of a military alliance, but it's something more than a casual encounter. They signed 15 different agreements on trade and exchanges, including an agreement to buy Russian oil and natural gas, including an agreement to buy Russian wheat. Obviously, and sanctions were being anticipated by both sides. And China was saying to Russia, we're going to help you evade the sanctions. The other thing they did, and they did it 4 months ago, this is very, very curious. They changed their shipping agreement with Russia. You know, normally you put goods on a ship from Russia, you ship it to China. When it gets to the port in China, China takes delivery of the goods and pays for it. They changed the shipping arrangement so that they were buying the goods at the Russian port. So the goods belong to China. Why does that matter? Because it means that those ships were carrying Chinese goods, couldn't be confiscated, couldn't be embargoed, couldn't be confiscated on the high seas because they no longer belong to Russia. That's not the way things are normally shipped. That happened back in November of last year. That's another, I think, sign that they were thinking about how to evade the sanctions. And I think there are a lot of foolish people in Washington, D.C., quite frankly, who still think of China as a country that we can work with, that we can partner with on different issues. And that's why they went in December and January to China and said, you know, we know that Russia is getting ready to invade Ukraine. We want you to help you. We want you to help us stop the invasion. Well, China didn't want to stop the invasion. China was encouraging Vladimir Putin to go into Ukraine because that takes the world's attention off of China. It takes the world's attention off the fact that they released the China virus, COVID-19, and caused the deaths of millions of people around the world. It takes attention off the fact that China is gearing up to invade Taiwan and has made territorial claims in the South China Sea, in vis-a-vis Japan. They've attacked India. All of the misdeeds of China, the Chinese Communist Party, have now been moved to the back burner in the minds of people around the world because we're all focused on Ukraine. So this is a win-win for China, and it's utter foolishness to think that they would help us avoid an invasion that they were working with Vladimir Putin to make sure occurred. And now we go to China and we say we have a meeting with the Chinese senior foreign official, and the meeting is not scripted in advance, and we come out of the meeting once again humiliated because, quite frankly, the people in Washington, D.C. apparently can't see beyond the next opinion poll to the large strategic threat looming right before our very eyes. I'm afraid that a lot of these people who are in the current administration were formerly working for think tanks, formerly had ties with China, and maybe looking beyond the current crises in Ukraine and maybe even looking beyond their current jobs in the White House to their future employment as lobbyists for a certain foreign country, or maybe working for think tanks which get funding from China. China has learned in the last 25 years how to work the American system to a T.
Wow. And that is a very depressing picture you're painting, Stephen Mosier.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. Sometimes we got to be brutally honest with ourselves. Stephen Mosier is talking about the influence of China on the world stage right now. Just going back to that moment in the fall when the U.S. came to China and said, we want you to help us with Russia. And news reports came out saying that we shared strategic information with China, hoping they would help us. Mm-hmm. And China turned around and shared it with the Russians. Were we totally naive? Were we foolish? Or were we just idiots in those kinds of things? I mean, it sounds like nobody had their guard up or nobody was asking the specific questions of the bigger picture here.
No one was. And it was foolish and naive. It was all of the things that you, all of the words that you used to describe it and more, because there is still the lingering hope among people in Washington, D.C., most of whom have some financial connections with China, by the way, that China will somehow go our way. They will accept their role as a member of the existing international order. They will play ball with us. They will negotiate agreements and not cheat after the agreements are signed. That ship sailed a long, long time ago. It's clear that China is bound on its own trajectory through time. It's clear that China has its own plans for a new world order, which has the United States not just in second place, but completely dethroned as a major player. And that's the plan. It has been in place for a long, long time. It is supposed to reach fruition in 2049, and the clock is ticking right now. By 2039, they want to be in control of Asia. By 2049, they want to be the dominant power in the world. And again, if Russia becomes a vassal state, we might call it a tributary state of China, with its vast resources locked in by China on long-term contracts, which is the way they operate, the world could look like a very different place for our children and grandchildren. We have to be clear-eyed about the threat that China faces. And look, I'm not an apologist for what's going on in Ukraine at all, but we have to back up and say when the smoke clears, when this conflict is over, and I think the Russian armored columns now are grinding to a halt in the spring mud in Ukraine. They're grinding to a halt for the lack of spare parts and the lack of good maintenance. They're grinding to a halt because of the lack of supplies. Logistics is an army marches on its stomach, said Napoleon. Well, today an army marches with a supply train of trucks coming constantly to refuel and feed the troops. And those trucks aren't getting through because of Ukrainian resistance. So I pray that we're going to see a negotiated peace here shortly. And at the end of the day, when Putin is gone, Russia needs to be part of the West. The Russian people are Christians in large part, hopefully more every day. And we need to be working with them to respect human rights and freedom in Russia, not driving Russia into the arms of a communist tyranny.
What was the theater on this past Monday where supposedly China is backing out of and starting for the first time calling it an invasion?
Well, it's very interesting that China has watched from the mountaintop as the tigers fight below. That's an ancient Chinese stratagem, by the way. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the sort of thing that we mean when we say, let's you and him fight. So helping Ukraine was not in the picture. Helping Russia invade Ukraine was. They wanted Russia to fight Ukraine. They wanted the West to get involved and bogged down in a kind of proxy war. But I think everyone, not just the Chinese, but myself included, has been surprised at how poorly the Russian army has performed. We've been surprised at how effectively the Ukrainians have resisted. I believe that Putin probably assured the leader of the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping, that this would be over in a few weeks, that the armored columns would go in and encircle Kiev, Zelensky would step down or be assassinated, and they would put in a puppet dictator like they have done in Belarus, another neighboring state. They would claim all of the Donbass, the eastern region of Ukraine. The new puppet government in Ukraine would recognize that Crimea belonged to Russia and give it up as a territory of Ukraine. And then the Russian troops would withdraw and there would be another puppet state under the control of Moscow and Vladimir Putin. That's not the way it's worked out. We've all been surprised at how poorly the Russian army of conscripts has been maintained. You know, I grew up in a time when in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, and when I was serving in the U.S. military, when we worried that the Soviet army would come bursting across eastern Germany into western Germany and would be in Paris in a few weeks. They were a formidable force on land and air and sea. And this pitiful showing in Ukraine, I think, has revealed to everybody, including China, how weak the Russian military actually is, how poorly the troops have performed, how often the tanks and armored personnel carriers have not just been blown up, but have broken down due to poor maintenance. It's really revealing China to be a paper tiger. And I'm sorry, China uses the phrase paper tiger. It's really revealing Russia to be a paper tiger. And I think Beijing is realizing that its ally, Russia, is a lot weaker than it thought. The world is realizing that. And so now wants a negotiated peace quickly.
Well,
but Russia's weakness, you see, is an opportunity for China to take advantage of the situation and draw China closer to itself.
I feel, too, and this is just perspective from the media, that we're not getting the full picture, whether it's the Ukrainian successes or the Russian failures. I feel like once this is said and done, we'll get a more accurate picture. In some aspects, Russia maybe is slowed, but I don't think they've given up still the prospect of what you said of encircling and Kyiv and replacing the presidency. That's still their objective. I think it may take a little longer, and I feel like those are some logistic issues that are still not going to impede their end goal. In regards to this buying oil from Russia, China buying oil, that the situation now we're going to draw, and the whole other financial aspects of this too. Would this war have happened if China was unwilling to buy the oil from Russia? It seems China decided to buy up their oil or to give them the monetary market for it. And now we're going to create a whole host of other issues in regards to the financial markets, the petrodollar. So this is actually going to expand, even if the U.S. can somehow avoid interaction, in a kinetic war. This has really damaged U.S. dollar on the world financial stage, too.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that there are more dollars in circulation around the world, perhaps, than there are in the United States itself. The dollar is the currency of the world. It's actually the currency of a number of countries in Central America, Ecuador, where they've abandoned their own currency and used the dollar. Why? Because the dollar has historically been among the most stable of the fiat currencies. Well, now that we have an administration that is spending us into stagflation, inflation is eating away at the value of the dollar. So that's one reason why people are becoming skeptical of holding dollars. But the other reason is that the sanctions that have been imposed on the oligarchs of Russia, the people who are billionaires because they stole in the 1990s the railroads and the steel mills and the mining industry and so forth that had been built by the Russian people over the decades under communism. For pennies, they bought it for pennies on the dollar. They're the ones who prop up Vladimir Putin. And we thought the Biden administration thought it would be a brilliant idea to seize their assets overseas without any sort of judicial proceeding, operating on the principle of collective punishment, where we are going to simply take your assets because we think you're a supporter of Vladimir Putin. So we're going to take your condominium overlooking Central Park. We're going to take your yacht, which is moored in Milan, Italy, and worth $200-$400 million. So and we're going to drive the oligarchs into a frenzy of anger at Putin, and they're going to remove him. Well, we have been known from the beginning as a country that respects the rule of law. We have been known as from the beginning as a country where you have judicial proceedings before you can seize assets like we are doing in this case. So it's a very bad precedent, and it sends a signal to the world that other people who have investments in America or around the world and the West could lose them at the drop of a hat if the political forces in Washington decide that that's what should happen. So that's another reason why people may be fleeing the dollar, why India is talking about buying oil from Russia at a discount and accepting another currency other than the dollar, why Saudi Arabia is talking about using another currency other than the dollar to buy oil from Russia and to trade in oil with China to accept the Chinese renminbi, the Chinese yuan, as currency. So, again, there are a lot of unintended consequences here, and I don't think that a lot of people in Washington are thinking beyond their next post-government job or the next opinion poll, quite frankly, in some cases. They're not making decisions based on the long-term interest of the American people.
So true. And I could go on a rant about how the immoral behavior of our government is really telling. And also, it's revealed the hand. I mean, we have seen how deep the tech companies are willing to do the bidding of people in the U.S. government, even if it goes against American law or constitutional rights, which is a shame. Broadening the conversation a bit and kind of bringing Taiwan into the picture. We've all kind of felt this black cloud hanging over Taiwan for some time. Do you think that this is kind of a proxy situation where China's kind of viewing Russia taking over its neighbor, how well that goes on the world stage to then plan? Because you have to think they're planning what their next strategy for Taiwan is going to be.
Yeah, this was kind of viewed, I think, by Beijing as a trial run for a future invasion of Taiwan. Mm-hmm. And there are lessons for everybody here. The lesson for the United States is that we need to arm Taiwan to the teeth with defensive weapons that it can use to forestall an invasion, and we need to do it yesterday. I know we have, for example, we have promised 100 Harpoon missiles, which are anti-ship missiles, to Taiwan. They're not due for delivery until 2025. That's way too late. They should get there tomorrow. Taiwan is a very different situation, of course, than Ukraine, because it has no common border with China. China can't just march into Taiwan the way it marched into North Korea during the Korean War, the way it marched into Hong Kong a few years ago and simply took over the 7.5 million people of Hong Kong because it had a land bridge to the new territories. There's a 90-mile-wide moat. 90-mile-wide Taiwan Straits is a pretty good moat to prevent an invasion fleet from ever reaching the beaches in Taiwan.
It looks like that China realizes that. So they seem pretty methodical in figuring out a plan. Like you said, they deal for the long term. Sometimes America, the best thing about us is our democracy, but sometimes the worst thing is that and every other country knows they can wait 4 years. We'll wait it out. Or in this case, let's get the invasion done before Joe Biden gets kicked out in 2024. So you feel despots around the world are trying to make their move in the next 24 months.
Yeah. That's why the anti-ship missiles can't wait until 2025. Uh-huh. They need to be put there now. And make no mistake, I don't think anybody in the world really takes the current occupant of the White House seriously. I met Joe Biden for the first time in 1991 when we were setting up Radio Free Asia to broadcast news and information into China about what was really happening in China and bypassing the state-controlled media, bypassing the censorship. We set it up and it's been successful. But he was one of the people on the committee that we met with to talk about this project with, and he struck me then as he was not a serious person 30 years ago, and of course he's even less able to be coherent today. And besides, think about the fact that his family has taken money from Russia, from Ukraine, and from China. So all of the major players see the Biden family as compromised and compromisable, not only in the past but perhaps in the future as well. So these are the worst possible people to be leading America in a crisis, and I'm afraid we're going to lurch from one crisis to another as long as he's in office, because now, his presence in the White House emboldens dictators. China would certainly like to take Taiwan. China would certainly like to embargo Taiwan, for example, use its navy to block shipping in and out of Taiwan's major ports. They would like to control the airspace over Taiwan. They're constantly sending planes into Taiwan's airspace, forcing Taiwan, the Air Force to come up and meet them, intercept them, and then escort them out of Taiwan's airspace. So there are constant provocations here. I agree with the former Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, by the way, that we ought to recognize Taiwan as an independent country. Mm-hmm. They de facto are an independent country. They don't need to declare independence. We just need to extend diplomatic recognition to them, diplomatic recognition which should never have been broken off on January 1st of 1979. The Chinese Communist Party demanded that we break relations with the Republic of China on Taiwan. we did so. Kissinger did so because he was desperate to break up any possibility of China working with the Soviet Union, which was a good goal. But he shouldn't have broken relations with Taiwan. We need to establish relations with Taiwan and encourage other countries to do so. That's an additional protection, I think, against a future Chinese invasion, something we can do without provoking a Chinese invasion.
Wow. There's a lot of things in play here. Stephen Mosher, before we've got just a minute or two before we wrap up, I want to ask you about this resurgence of COVID and the shutting down of all these port cities in China. For the rest of the world, Omicron wave has come. We all got through it. We're all packing up COVID and putting it behind us, hopefully, until they need it again and they'll pull that card out again. But the fact that China has now started locking down again on the Omicron wave, it feels like there's more to that as well. Do you have anything you could, some light you could shed on that?
Well, I've written a book called The Politically Incorrect Guide to Pandemics, which will be out in a few weeks. And in The Politically Incorrect Guide to Pandemics, I point out that natural immunity, our God-given immunity, has ended every plague in human history. We know that. I go over the evidence in the book. And it is natural immunity, not the vaccine, not the social distancing, not the masking, not the quarantines, not the school closures, not all the other nonsense that we by neglecting every public health, every bit of public health knowledge we had accumulated over the centuries, that ended the pandemic here. China went for COVID zero. And China lied about its success in stopping out, stamping out COVID in China. Mm-hmm. It continually said, we just have a few cases, we're quarantining them, we're going to reach COVID zero, COVID will not find a foothold in China. Well, that's just prolonging the inevitable. Mm-hmm. That's just keeping the virus from encountering human immune system, which develop a defense to it. That's just keeping the population from reaching herd immunity. We've reached herd immunity. The mm-hmm. European countries have reached herd immunity, although some of them are a little reluctant to admit it. China hasn't, because they've been trying to put out these little brush fires, these COVID outbreaks, over the last 2 years. Now it's too late, because Omicron, also pronounced I'm a cold, is so infectious that it cannot be stopped. It spreads very, very quickly. And China's going to now face what we all faced last year. Mm-hmm. It's going to burn through the population, and there's nothing they can do to stop it. I think they fell into a kind of totalitarian fantasy, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. The totalitarian idea that we can control everything. We can control what right. people think by brainwashing them, where they go, how they move, what they spend their money on, whether or not they contract a virus. Well, the virus is going to virus. Whether you like it or not, the virus is going to spread whether you like it or not. And the best thing we can do is just boost the human immune system, all stay healthy, and protect the vulnerable. That's what sensible people were saying two years ago. That's what China did not do and is now paying the cost.
Oh, see, and I thought it was they were trying to mess with the supply chain issues. That's why they were shutting that down. And Stephen Mosher, we'd love to have you back on at some point to talk about your book. When is it coming out again?
It's being published by Regnery Press right around the 1st of July.
Okay. Well, we look forward to speaking with you about that. We just love talking to you about anything. Keep up the good work and keep your perspective on the stage, because you bring a sense of faith and understanding of politics and wars and strategies that I think a lot of people in the public discourse don't. So, Stephen Mosher, thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Joining us.
Thank you.
Michelle McAloon.
It's a complicated world.
Yeah, it is. It is. Stay mm-hmm. safe over mm-hmm. there in Germany. I know you got a lot going on over there. We will talk to you next time on Convergence.